the phone to search the room, but he was nowhere to be found. She glanced over toward the bathroom. There was no sliver of light sneaking through underneath the door. Trying to stay calm, she got up and put on her robe. She briefly considered taking her gun out of the bedside drawer, but chose against it. There were a dozen credible reasons Ryan might not be in bed, and there was no need to jump to conclusions. But after everything they'd been through, she couldn't blame herself for the instinct. It's not like serial killers hadn't leapt out of the shadows in the past. She slid her feet into her slippers and shuffled out of the room, armed only with her phone and a body full of adrenaline. At the last second, her apprehension got the better of her, and she stepped back into the bedroom to grab one of Ryan's canes. As she made her way down the hall, holding the cane above her shoulder like a baseball bat, she reminded herself that her boyfriend might just be restless. Even though it had been 6 months since he was stabbed, and despite how well his rehabilitation was going, sometimes he was still overcome by anxiety that could only be subdued by middle-of-the-night pacing. She saw a dim light coming from the breakfast room and moved toward it as quietly as possible. Peeking around the corner, she saw Ryan hunched over the breakfast table, poring through a pile of papers. He looked lost in thought. Sighing in relief, she put the cane down, resting it against the wall, out of sight. Then she coughed quietly, so as not to startle him, as she stepped into the room. He looked up, seeming to take a moment to connect the sound to the person in front of him.
"Hi,"
he said.
"Hi,"
she whispered back, not wanting to wake her sister, Hannah, who was hopefully fast asleep in her room. "What's up?"
"I think I may have a breakthrough in the case," he said excitedly.
Jesse walked over and sat down across from him at the table. It had only been a month since he'd started consulting for the LAPD, so she could understand his enthusiasm at being back in the mix. But she was worried about the effect of expending so much energy on a case instead of rehab. Of course, she couldn't say that without sounding unsupportive, so she didn't.
"What did you find?"
she asked. He smiled. Clearly, he'd hoped she would ask.
"You know the case I was looking into? The one with the girl who was carved up?"
he asked. Jesse nodded. He hadn't mentioned any details beyond that to her, but she did know this was the case he hoped might justify involvement by Homicide Special Section. HSS was a specialized LAPD unit dedicated to solving cases that had high profiles or intense media scrutiny, often involving multiple victims or serial killers. Ryan had led the unit before the stabbing attack that had put him in a coma for weeks and left him incapacitated for months after that. Now Captain Roy Decker, his boss, and the man in charge of HSS, had tasked Ryan with finding cases that fit the profile of the unit, which was in danger of being shut down.
"You mentioned the case vaguely,"
she said, with the slightest hint of an edge. "But that's about all I know. You've been keeping all the details close to the vest." He picked up on her tone.
"I didn't tell you much, because I knew that if I did, you'd get as obsessed as me,"
he said, apologetically, before tweaking her.
"I didn't want to drag you down from your ivory tower."
That was a reference to Jesse's work as an instructor at UCLA, where she'd been teaching criminal profiling for a semester now. Other than an occasional consulting gig of her own for the department, she'd spent the last 6 months leading a fairly stable, obsession-free lifestyle. Of course, one of those consulting gigs was just 4 weeks ago.
"I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you all the way down there among the rabble," she teased back.
"Do you want to give me a hard time, or do you want to tell me what you're so clearly dying to share?" He smiled at her taunt. Jesse knew he loved it when she gave him crap, and she loved to see the broad grin on his face. After worrying that he might not survive at all, and then watching him endure multiple painful, often disheartening months of trying to relearn basic functions, like tying his shoes and holding a fork, he was finally starting to look more like his old self again. Once a rock-hard 6-foot-200-pound specimen, he'd lost over a quarter of his body weight and most of his strength after the attack. Now he was back up near 180 pounds,